Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution made possible, as always, by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. Ultra-conservative investments make money 10% of the time and never lose. At the other extreme, some Far East funds lose money as much as 60% of the time and make money only 40% of the time. So what level of risk are you up for? Try our award-winning risk analysis tool and discover something about yourself. It puts a number to your risk tolerance. From there, if you'd like, professionals at KPP Financial can tell you if your current retirement plan is a good match for your risk number. Just look for the InvestTalk tab and then risk analysis on investtalk.com. End of commercial. And now today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, April 25th, 2016 edition of Invest Talk. So, what will be the big financial story for today? How will it impact your portfolio? Quarterly earnings are not inspiring investors so far in the earnings season, and we're a day ahead of the Federal Reserve meeting. That fact likely prompted investors to shy away from more risky assets today. And oil prices resumed their rise recently after a brief pause, and they fell a little bit. They fell a little bit today. But should that matter much? How much do oil prices really matter to the market? I would say they're material, but they're not everything. So, what sectors show the most promise in today's market? Or which ones show strong negative prospects? Is it energy, cyclical goods, financials, healthcare? We're here today to help you sort out the matters to you right now. What matters to you right now? And helping you make better choices. Set your priorities. Are you looking long range as a long-term investor? Are you a short-term trader? You know, I can answer questions about either one. And that's usually the first question I ask when anyone calls up an individual stock or company and say, well, what's your time horizon? Because that is ultimately the first question everyone should be asking themselves when they're looking at an investment. And then you have to understand the risks that are involved in the short, medium, and long term. Because something that's overvalued in the short term can still be a great long-term investment, and vice versa. Something that can be a great long-term investment can be a bad short-term investment, and vice versa. That could be bad long-term investment, but great short-term because that sector is just doing pretty well. Okay, so there's a lot of little nuances to making your decisions, but you have to consciously think about them and write them down, weigh the pros and cons, and then make your decision. And that's what we're here to do, is to help you weigh those pros and cons. Now, above average investing for the average investor is what InvestTalk is all about. We have this hour together, so I hope you'll feel welcome to join in on the discussion. This is a joint conversation. I know when Steve and I aren't together, it may sound like we're just one voice talking, but ultimately, we want all of your inputs as much as possible into what we discuss on the show each and every weekday. So today, we're going to talk about five terms everyone should know about investing. There's a lot of industry jargon out there, and it can be complex, it can be confusing, and we get that. But it doesn't mean that you give up. I mean, there's terms that I still learn that I don't, you know, usually they're very obscure at this point, but there's still terms that I either hear for the first time or I get a better grasp on what they mean. Okay? So don't think that you're ever done learning, and don't think that's too hard to learn. Oh, it's too complex. There's too many terms. No. It's just like anything. It's consistency and exposure, and you'll learn. So should investors be wary of unfamiliar terms? No. It's important that you understand the working terms of the money world. That's going to be one of our main talking points today. And if you're working with an advisor, They should be able to explain these terms they use and hopefully not use too complex terms. You know, we try to keep it simple for our clients. And we try to get them to understand the tools that we use and make it a very straightforward process. And that's what I think anybody who's advising should be doing, is try to get their clients to understand, not to dazzle them with fancy words. So stay tuned. If you're kind of fuzzy on the definition of things like annuities, cash value policies, partnerships, options, hedge funds, just to name a few, and we're going to get to the definition of many more as well. Now, a little bit of history now. For years, Ben Bernanke was the chairman of the Federal Reserve. Like all Fed officials, he came from the academic arena. And in his time there, he studied the Great Depression. He did his dissertation on the Great Depression. He studied it extensively and strongly believed that if he was in charge of the Fed back then, at that time, he would have done something to avoid it. His theory was that to avoid the Depression, the Fed could have printed money, flooded the economy with liquidity to fight deflation. And that's exactly what he did. His tactics came to reality during the financial crisis. He lowered rates to zero, did QE, quantitative easing. And I know that can be a complex term as well. So this is just some of the background we discussed on our live webinar on the 14th of this month. This webinar is called Survival and Opportunity in a Volatile Market. It's a recording of the webinar will be available this week to our InvestTalk insiders. So if you missed it, you can still catch it in a recorded version. Can't get interactive with us, but at least you can watch it. It's easy to get and it's free to sign up. To get it, though, you have to be an InvestTalk insider. And to sign up to be one, just go to investtalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab, and you'll see that right there. Now, right now, it's time to talk about your money topic. We're here to try to help answer your questions. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. So let's take on a question that came in over the weekend right now.
Hi, Justin. Hi, Steve. Raphael from Jersey. Thanks for your show. Learned a lot. Question I have is, I know you guys are value investors predominantly. Have a question, though, about valuation. If you get a company that is producing, I don't know, 20%+ earnings growth, let's say for 6 years in a row, isn't it natural to believe that that valuation is going to be way, way up there? Especially if guidance keeps coming in line with that type of growth year over year and quarter after quarter. And the stock I'm looking at and I'm currently have been holding is Under Armour, which had a good announcement and the stock responded in kind. I know because of your valuation metrics and how you look at things, you would never own Under Armour. So the actual question really is, at what point can you validate a very high valuation like someone like Under Armour at 70 to 80 times earnings, considering the consistency and the growth in the model and the management as well? Do you ever make exceptions, or are these stocks you're comfortable with never actually owning? Okay. All right. That's it. Thanks and have a wonderful day.
That's a great question. I love that call. He's asking about growth investing. And he's right. We are value investors, and that tends to be how we bend our clients' portfolios, our own portfolios, and that's our viewpoint on the market because we see and history has shown and the studies show that value investing over long periods of time outperforms growth investing. But what he's saying is, do you just put all these other growth type names outside the realm of possibility of buying just because they're trading at very high valuations? And he's pointing at Under Armour. And the Under Armour's done very, very well. They've done something that very few companies have been able to do, and that's really take market share from Nike, or at least compete with Nike, get in the same ballpark as Nike, right? And they've done that with various strategies, and they have Steph Curry, probably the best basketball player in the NBA. They have a few other big athletes that are doing very, very well. They're pretty innovative. And so they are a growth name, but they're trading at an 85 P ratio right now. And even if you go by next year's earnings, so it's supposed to be 85 cents a share, you're still talking about a P ratio in the 50s, which is expensive. Do you say I put these out of possibility of buying? I'd say no, just because it's trading at a high P/E ratio. It's okay to pay up for growth. It's just a matter of how much do you really want to pay up, right? And for something like Under Armour, who's growing their earnings at about a, you know, you're talking about a 20%, 30% clip, I want to get a P/E ratio in around the 30 level. You know, I want a, around a 1-to-1 ratio of growth to the P/E ratio. And so at 85 or 50, even on the forward-looking basis, I would say it's still not cheap enough. And then you can look at it from other aspects as well, cash flow. The problem with Under Armour is their cash flow isn't that strong, especially for a $20 billion company. They had negative free cash flow over the last 12 months, and in 2014, they only had $79 million in free cash flow. So it's still expensive. Do I say, no, I will never buy this stock? Absolutely not. I would pay a premium for Under Armour. But it's all about the amount of premium, and at these levels, it's still not cheap enough. I would have to see it probably in the high 20s for me to pick it up, and right now it's at 46. Now, we're glad you're with us today for Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. I invite you to join our Invest Talk Insiders. It's a way to have access to all sorts of good information, commentary, lists, and recorded webinars. There's also info sheets on managing a bond portfolio and much, much more. Sign up for free on InvestTalk.com. Click on the Invest Talk tab. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through to ask your question on today's show. We have about 40 minutes left in the show, but that goes by quick. So call sooner rather than later. I know I get to rush a calls near the end of the show a lot of times. Now, today, we are going to talk about five terms everyone should know about investing. I know it can be complex to understand the industry jargon, but it doesn't have to be. It's just really about consistency and a little bit of education for yourself to get up to speed on some of the terms. And a lot of the terms are important to know if you're going to be making your own money decisions. So that's our main talking point today. But I also want to talk about, is the country's hottest housing market finally cooling off? And for all our listeners up in the Bay Area, you're going to really be interested in this topic because there's talking about the Bay Area, the San Francisco Bay Area market. So if you're listening on KDOW, then you will probably want to stay tuned for that. And then Saudi Arabia. They're announcing a very ambitious plan to get themselves off of oil dependency. And this is probably long overdue, and this is a plan that I think a lot of Middle Eastern countries are probably going to push or turn to as well. But Saudi Arabia is kind of getting there sooner rather than later. So I think that'll be interesting to show what that tells us about the market. And then closing in on retirement. If you're getting close to retirement, what types of things should you be considering? All right. So those are our talking points today. But ultimately, I want to hear what's on your mind. 888-99-CHART is our number to get through and ask your question on this hour. Now, let's take a quick look at the market today. We had the S&P down about 4 points, the NASDAQ down about 10 points, and the Dow down 26 points. And a modest down day. You have the Fed coming out or starting their meeting tomorrow. They're not going to do anything. But it's always about what they say and how hawkish they are or dovish they are. And by hawkish, I mean how many of the members want to raise rates, maybe dissent, and I think it could be three or more of the members, or how many say, no, we definitely don't need to raise rates. And how maybe there's not many dissenters at all. And they're going to be putting rate rises on hold for a while. So that'll be interesting to see. We're in the midst of earnings season. It hasn't been that robust. You had oil down a little bit today, gold down a little bit. Commodities pulled back on the strength of the dollar. Now, this is Invest Talk, a place to talk about your money. I'd love to hear about your portfolio, about what type of risk you're taking. What's your mix of assets? Let's talk about it. 888 888- 99 chart. Let's go to James in Sonoma. How you doing, James?
Well, I'm doing okay. Today I'm calling about an ETF with preferred stocks.
Okay.
And I'm using this in a IRA.
Yep.
It would be new money, and it would be to shore up my fixed income side. I'm a little light on that. We've used new money to buy bonds, mm-hmm. but I need something. The financial advisor wants to juice it up a little bit. And so this isn't a terribly lot of money, but he said you might want to consider a preferred stock. I like this one only because it doesn't have any financials in it. I'm a little scared of the financials. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what you guys' opinion of it was and what your opinion of preferred stocks were. Anyway, unfortunately, this one's gone up a little bit in the last 6 weeks, so it's probably not the greatest time to buy it. But I'd just like your overall opinion of preferred stocks and this one in particular.
Yeah, I actually kind of I like preferreds right now over common stock. I like this one because same reasons you do, the X financials, where most preferred stocks or securities are issued by financial companies. So if you buy a preferred ETF or preferred mutual fund, you're probably going to get a pretty large percentage of the portfolio in financials. But obviously this one came out to service people like you who don't want that type of exposure, and they rather have exposure to things like Tyson Foods or Kinder Morgan, things like that. And that's what this holds. And so it yields about almost 6%, and it has gone up recently, but the whole market's rallied a little bit. So understand that this will be more volatile than your typical fixed income portfolio. Do you understand that?
Yeah, it's to add something a little extra. We already have, we're adding new money to bonds. Mm-hmm. This is just to add a little something, a little spice it up a little bit, would give a little boost to the yield.
Yeah, that's no problem. You know, as long as you understand that it is a little bit higher risk than your typical fixed income position, but that 6.5% yield is really nice, and I like that it's diversified. The expense ratio is fairly low. I would give it a thumbs up as a nice diversifier for your portfolio.
Thank you very much.
No problem, James. Thanks for calling. That was PFX. F is the symbol, PFXF. Now, that's a great call to segue into our main talking point today, which is about five financial terms everyone should know about investing. And preferred stocks are one of those. And that's what he was, James, the caller just previously was asking about, was an ETF that holds preferred shares or preferred stock in different companies. And preferred stock, I'll give this a definition, is basically if you're talking about the capital structure. And the capital structure is who has the rights to different assets. And bondholders, senior bondholders always have the rights, first rights to assets in liquidation or whatever. So they're the safest, right? Common stock usually is last. And so be the most risky. Well, preferred is kind of, think of it as in the middle of that. Okay? So that's a good way to understand where preferred is. It pays a dividend. It's kind of like debt. It doesn't, that dividend doesn't fluctuate, but it's not a bondholder. So all bondholders are higher than them in case of a bankruptcy. They have the bondholders have the claim on the assets before preferred shareholders. So that's a good example of that, of a term that a lot of people don't understand. But what are some other terms that some people do not understand? There's a lot of complex terms out there. Now, one is active versus passive management. And this has picked up steam recently because a lot of people are saying, well, you just want to be passive. Passive investing is best. And that means indexing. Whether it's an ETF, whether it's a mutual fund, whatever it is, you're just investing in that particular index. And you're not trying to beat it. And that means that you're not going to fall behind it either. Well, active management is trying to beat that index. And depending on the asset class, active management can be good. Depending on the manager, active management can be good. And vice versa. I always say if large cap stocks, usually indexing is better. If you're talking about a diversified portfolio where you're talking about foreign stocks, small cap stocks, bonds, etc., usually active management is better. Okay. Number two, fiduciary. This is big and you're going to hear it a lot more over the next year or so because of the new rule that came out about what is if about all the advisors in the industry basically are going to become fiduciaries. And that means that if you're a fiduciary, which we are for our clients, that we are legally and ethically obligated to act in the best interest of our clients. So if someone is a fiduciary, that's what they are obligated to do. So consumers don't usually understand this term, and all SEC registered RIAs like us are fiduciaries. Now there's a lesser standard in the brokerage industry called the suitability standard, and that's what that is going away. And so a lot of these brokers, they're just trying to get your commission and just putting you in something that's suitable, not what's best for you, are going to have a tough time doing business. So there's a couple terms that I think you need to understand. I'll get to three more coming up. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. Do you have a question about building a portfolio, shaping it to be more defensive in this environment? We want to respond to what you need to know. 888-99-CHART. Please welcome the call.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. A reminder that no matter where you live in the United States, you can have your retirement portfolio reviewed by a registered investment advisor. There's no cost. Steve does a few of these each month on Skype or telephone. To schedule your time with Steve, just click on the Invest Talk tab on investtalk.com and then Portfolio Review. Continue now with this Monday, April 25th Invest Talk. Check in now with your questions. You're welcome to call 888-99-CHART. The line is always open. Join in the conversation.
We have 25 minutes left in the show, but get your call in sooner rather than later. We are here for you, beginner or experienced investor. It does not matter. 888-99-CHART. If you're a podcast listener and you can't reach us during our live program, 4 to 5 Pacific time, you can always call and leave a message and we'll answer it on the next program, just like this caller did.
Hey, Steve and Justin. This is Jake Cullen. I'm a podcast listener from Los Angeles. I had a question for you guys about VF Corp, ticker symbol VFC. I'm interested in possibly picking up a position in the stock. Just want to know what you guys' thoughts were on that. I'm a big fan of the show, guys, and I'll listen to you on the podcast. Thanks again.
All right, he's looking at VF Corp. This is actually a company. I have a good friend that works there. She works at North Face, which is one of their brands, and they have a lot of brands. They own brands like Vans, Seven for All Mankind, North Face, like I said, Timberland, Nautica. They have a bunch of different brands. Lucy, I think, is a yoga brand that they have. So it's a portfolio of different clothing and apparel brands. And this is a company that has a strong track record of good profitability, good, solid, steady growth. You know, it's not going to knock your socks off with revenue growth or earnings growth. You know, it's rare that you're going to get earnings or revenue growth higher than, you know, the mid-teens. It's just not how they operate generally. It's a slow growth name, but it's also very, very profitable with their return on equity ranging in the low 20s to high teens range on a consistent basis, modest amount of debt. They pay a nice 2.3% dividend yield, which is very safe. I think their payout ratio is less than 50%. That's pretty nice and good cash flow. But the question is it cheap enough? You know, revenues were down 5% last quarter. Earnings were down 3%. And this is slowing down with the overall consumer market in general. So I like the company long term. I think it has a strong strong prospects over the next 10, 15 years. I think they know how to run brands and they know how to make them profitable and cash flow well. However, I think in the short term, it's overpriced. You know, PE is 21. So that's a little worrisome for me. And I would say I wouldn't pick this up until, let's look at a chart real quick. Let me go to a longer term chart. I would say, this one's tough. I'm going to say the high or the low 40s. Right now it's at 63. So I think another 20 to 30% drop in the stock. It's already been down. It's already had a high of around 75, 80 bucks, and now it's at 63. So the trend is down, you know, with overall market in general. And I would say keep it on your watch list. If you have a 10 plus year time horizon, I think you'll do fine. If you are worried about the market like we are, I would say hold off for a little while. So that's VF Corp. Great stock on your watch list, but it's a little overvalued at the current time. Now let's get to our, let's finish up our talking point today, which is about five terms everyone should know about investing. And I touched on active versus passive management and being a fiduciary. And the third one is exchange traded funds, ETFs. These are have become more and more popular over the past 20 years. And really, this is just an easier way or a more tax efficient way to track an index. And there are some ETFs now that are active, have active management, like I talked about a little bit before. But typically, they have low fees. They track an index. They're easy to buy. You do pay commission on them usually. There are some brokers that have some ETFs that are commission free. But generally, you pay a commission to buy and sell them. But they're very simple. You're just buying a basket of assets. And they could be equities, they could be bonds, they could be preferred stock, like the caller was discussing earlier in the show today. Could be a mix of them all. It just depends on what that is. So it's remember, an ETF is just a fund that typically tracks an index. Then a managed account, number four. Many registered investment advisors have discretionary authority over the client's accounts, and that's what we do. So we're not like a broker where we say, okay, we think our client should buy this stock or this percentage of our portfolio should be in this investment. We don't call them up and get permission. We have authority to trade their account, and we go out and we buy it, which is kind of different than how brokers work. And that's pretty typical of how most registered investment advisors work. Now, I think a lot of people, when they hear managed account, they confuse that with just a typical brokerage account that they can go themselves in and manage themselves and buy and sell. Okay? So a managed account typically is exactly what we do. Go out there and we buy the same percentage for all of our of a particular investment in all of the accounts within a particular strategy that we employ. We have various strategies. So that's what a managed account typically looks like. And then finally, a market cycle. Simply put, a market cycle is the time period during which the market rises to a peak, which is called a bull market, right? The market's going up, bull market, then it falls to some sort of a trough, a bear market. It's always hard to know how long the bull market is or how long the bear market will be. But if you are looking for a full cycle, you're talking about the market cycle, you have to understand bull and bear markets and how the investment does in bull and bear markets. So many people only focus on the up or just the down. But you have to look at the risk and reward of every type of investment. How does it operate and how does it perform in bull markets? How does it perform in bear markets? You have to understand these things. If you don't, you're going to make bad decisions. If you just look at what happened over the last 2 years or 3 years, you're going to not have a very good idea of what that investment's going to do over the next 2 or 3 years. Usually, it's very different. So look at the full market cycle of any investment before you make a decision on buying or selling it. Now it's time for Invest Talk Personal, the money choices we make that can have a lasting impact. Now we talk a lot about risk and how much can you stand to take. And that's usually framed in a negative sense. Taking risks is essential to living. We have to take some risk to get through the day. And Jeffrey Rose wrote a piece about risk for dailyfinancial.com. And he says it's okay to take reasonable risks. To earn any type of profit, you need to take, or I said this, to get a reasonable profit, you need to take some type of risk. You can take no risk and invest in, you know, maybe a CD. But in this environment, you're not going to get pretty much any return. Almost no return. Now, he writes about a woman who decided to take what her mother considered to be an unreasonable risk. She took out a personal loan to launch a new business, a brand new business. She was making a decent living selling cosmetics, so her mother just couldn't understand why she'd take such a risk and when she could just have kept on selling cosmetics to make a stable income. I can understand her mother's concern, but you know what? Helen's mother isn't Helen. Helen is Helen. Helen knows herself, her intentions better than her mother. And you know what? Helen was right. And Helen launched the business, made millions with her business, and it all started because Helen took a reasonable risk, not a foolish one. And that just goes to show it's not just the risk that you're taking with your investments, but with your life as well. And your income, taking a particular job, launching a company in this case. Now, sometimes, granted, it's difficult for us to determine what a reasonable risk is and what is an unreasonable risk, but sometimes it's best to get advice of our friends and family. However, it might be better for us to just get the advice of an unbiased third party. And that's what I always say. I think that's the best. If somebody that doesn't know you that well but can understand your situation well enough, that isn't tied emotionally to what you're doing, who you are, that can be a financial advisor like us. And could be anybody, really. Friends and family usually have some sort of emotions tied to it, to that decision. Now, generally speaking, a reasonable risk is one that won't bankrupt us if our idea falls apart. It's usually reasonable, right? You risk a fraction of your money, your finances, not the whole thing. You don't put your whole life savings into, you know, a new business that's unproven. But if you're not used to taking risks, it's going to be scary when you first try it out. So that's why we say baby steps. Start slow. I see this all the time as people, they want to make money, they want to invest, and they put money into a brokerage account, and they go full bore, and they put tens of thousands of dollars out there, and they get burned because they do the wrong thing usually, which is typical. You learn the hard way. But that burns them, and it prevents them from taking risks down the line. And they get scarred from it. Okay? So taking reasonable risks is important. But taking the right amount of risk is even more important. So you may got to make sure you gauge whatever risks you're taking. So how much risk is enough or too much? Want to talk about it? Check in now on the phones at 888-99-CHART. Or send me a note. You can do that by clicking on the Contact Justin button on investtalk.com.
Steve has some new check updates listed on investtalk.com. He'll be in San Ramon May 11th and San Jose May 25th. To schedule your time on either of those dates, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab.
Hello, love the show. This is Corey from Louisiana. And my question is there any chance of Google or Alphabet doing a stock split in the near future? Thank you.
The answer is yes. He's talking about Google, or Alphabet is the new name. G-O-O-G is a symbol. Could they do a stock split? Sure. I don't see why that's out of the realm of possibility. I believe they've done it before. To be honest, I'm not sure. But I think they have. I guess that answers the question. Should that matter a whole lot to the long-term outlook of Google? Probably not. Can it give a boost in the short term? Sure. But doesn't make it a better investment just because it splits. People don't realize that. You know, a stock splits at Google's at $723 a share. And say they split 10 for one, it goes to $72 a share. Does that make Google a more attractive investment? Absolutely not, in the long term anyway. There are studies that show in the short term it can boost things because you get more people involved. People think it's cheap. Well, it's not any cheaper. It's just 10 times more shares. Earnings would go from last year they made $29.49. Well, it would be $2.95. Okay, so there's really no, it doesn't change the value of Google. So understand that. Right. Now let's talk a little bit about the real estate market in the Bay Area. Home prices in San Francisco declined last month for the first time in 4 years, according to Redfin. The median home price in the area dropped 1.8% in March from last year to just slightly over $1 million, $1,040,000. Now, last year, prices rose 15%, but things are starting to cool off. Sales took a hit. They sank 22% in March year over year. And normally, March marks the start of the home buying season, but sales cooled. And we're hearing from agents that usually what happened before was you price the home a little bit low and encourage a bidding war. But now that's starting to not happen as much. Homes are selling for about now 7% above their asking price. That's dipped a little bit from a year ago. Homes are now sitting on the market a little longer. Inventory is up 4% year over year, which isn't a lot, but it's starting to tick the other way after, was shrinking before. Homes used to be sold in less than a week. Now they're sitting on the market for maybe 2 or 3 weeks. So it's still a seller's market, but it's starting to cool. And this is what I was talking about just a couple months ago. And this all is linked to, there's two factors. Three factors, I think. One is just a very hot, inflated market. The prices are starting to scare off people. You're starting to see, and that's number one. Number two is foreign buyers, particularly Chinese buyers, are starting to slow. You're seeing that the Chinese economy is slowing a little bit, so Chinese investors and buyers have a little bit less money. Okay? And then finally, the tech bubble is starting to deflate. The people that can buy these homes usually have stock-based compensation tied to the unicorn companies up in the Bay Area, technology companies, and that's starting to wane a little bit. So affordability is stretched. High-end homes are starting to be hit sooner than kind of the lower end homes, and that's usually when the market starts to turn. So this is an environment nationally where affordable places with good economic growth are probably a better investment this time. That's what we're kind of helping clients look at right now and steer them away from kind of the bubble markets like the Bay Area. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm registered investment advisor Justin Klein. We still have time for your question. We'll get to it before the hour is up, hopefully. We have about 8 more minutes left in. So give us a call. 888-99-CHART is our number. Let's go to Jody in Sacramento. How you doing, Jody? Jody, you there?
Hi.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. What can I do for you?
Investment.
Yeah. So go. Say that one more time. You were cutting out. What was your question, Jody?
I would like to know if raising pork bellies is a good investment. Like pigs?
Raising pork bellies.
Yes.
That is a complicated question. Are you looking to become a pork belly farmer? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Absolutely. I would like to farm them, raise them, and sell them to the meat industry.
Okay. I can't tell you whether that's a good investment. That's something I have zero expertise in. That's running a business, really. And I'm not privy to the pork belly business and whether that's a good investment or not. Commodity businesses tend to be pretty tough. Just understand that because it's a competitive market. And it all depends on how much you're paying, how much expertise you have. That's way too much of a loaded question for me. Let's go to Benny in Sunnyvale. How are you doing, Benny?
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing great. What can I do for you?
Hey, I was trying to get your opinion on a couple of silver stocks, SLW and SSRI.
Okay. Well, we own SLW for our managed accounts, so I would say thumbs up on SLW. It's one of the largest silver miners out there, and they do silver streaming as well, which basically means they invest in the production of gold and silver. Okay, so we like Silver Wheaton and SLW, so I'm going to give that one a thumbs up. And then SSRI is Silver Standard Resources, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, they've done really well, as well, just like Silver Wheaton has. This is definitely going to be more volatile, more of a high flyer. They aren't making money, but they're projected to make money in 2017. It's cheap from a book value perspective. I mean, most of the miners out there are cheap. You know, gold and silver miners are pretty cheap. And this is no exception. So I would say this is going to be higher risk. It's not nearly as big as Silver Wheaton, but it's going to have more upside. So it's just a matter of what type of risk you're willing to take. If you want to take a lot of risk, and more upside, then that's Silver Standard Resources. If you're something that can still have very good upside, but maybe a lower risk, then I would go Silver Wheaton.
Got it. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks for calling. That was SLW, which is Silver Wheaton, and SSRI, which is Silver Standard Resources. Now let's go quickly to one of my talking points, which is about Saudi Arabia. They are unleashing a plan, and I think it's an ambitious plan, they call it Saudi Vision 2030, and this aims to reduce the country's dependence on oil revenues. And this is going to be quite the challenge because as of today, 70%, or at least as of last year, 70% of their revenue as a country came from petroleum sales, despite the drop in petroleum prices. And now their goals are by 2020 to live without oil. Now, I find that hard to believe. You go from 70% dependent on oil, and in 4 years, you're going to say we're not dependent on oil. I think that's just foolish to even imagine that it'd be a possibility. Now, could you reduce your dependence dramatically but in 4 years? Sure. Now, what are they going to do? How are they doing this? One is they're going to sell off 5% stake in Saudi Aramco, their state oil company, and that is going to be the most valuable company in the world when it goes public. $2.5 trillion. It's going to dwarf Apple or Exxon. So basically, this tells us that Saudi Arabia is scared of the future of oil, and I think they're right to be. Now, our time is up. If you have questions you want to ask me directly, you're welcome to send me a note. I don't know much about raising pigs, but most money matters, hopefully I can help you with. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Contact Justin button. I'm Justin Klein, Executive Vice President of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. Let's meet up on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.